Any guesses on where I'm going to start? Was that a conversation? Scott, did you just clear your throat right? Like the opening salvo? But yeah. After good morning, the first thing you do is clear your throat? Mike, what happened?
Morning. Like
I am staying away from you guys. You guys should stay away from me. Dr. Birx is out here saying that if you celebrated with Thanksgiving outside of anybody in your immediate circle, just assume that you have it. So I'm going to assume we all have it. And we should really stretch out the limits of 6 feet in there. And we should definitely not be clearing our throat into microphones across from each other.
That's just my general unhealthiness. I celebrated Thanksgiving with my family and only my family. That's it, my immediate direct family. Well, that's who I celebrated
with. But I called you on Friday and you said that your parents were in town and you were at dinner.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I guess your parents are your immediate family, but yes. It's not. When you say immediate family, I thought you were saying the people I've been in quarantine with all this time. Once you add, like, people were worried, the scientists and the doctors were worried about Thanksgiving. There was a lot of travel. We as a country are behaving just in a way that it's breathtaking, like literally breathtaking, given that some people are having trouble with their breathing. You see that sports continue on. And it's a disaster everywhere. Like, if you think that the structural integrity of your sport isn't damaged by the fact that the Saints get to play the Broncos in that condition, but the Dolphins lost to the Broncos because they got the Broncos in a different condition when they had quarterbacks, and then you're looking around all of college football and you don't know if they're going to be four healthy teams at the end.
I mean, a little Tuesday night football this week, Dano.
Are we sure we're getting that? Are we sure they're not going to?
Are
we sure they're not going to cancel that?
We got a game with a team that had no quarterbacks yesterday. We're getting Tuesday night football, man.
But this is what I'm telling you about structural integrity of the game. Oh. Don't you think that Chris Cody's Dolphins would have liked that Denver team? That embarrassing Denver team a week ago?
Yeah, I mean, of course they would have, you know. Luck of the schedule, luck of the draw, luck of the COVID.
Unluck, Stugatz. It's not luck of the COVID.
It all worked out. They got the Jets.
It was for the Saints, luck of the COVID.
Well, you say luck of the COVID, and I don't even know what the strength coach of the Cowboys died from, but can you imagine trying to play after that? Can you imagine in these times where everything is messed up and the strength and conditioning coach is just collapsing and you're going home for the day because you just saw the guy you work with die? Like, how the hell are you supposed to play after that?
I didn't think it was going to be this bad. I thought that they had resources. I thought you might have some isolated incidences. But like right now, the NFL is reflecting and college football is reflecting what's going on in America right now as we continue to spike. I didn't think we'd have a game where a wide receiver on the practice squad, in which it's been reported like there were some people within the organization that had no idea who this person was, is all of a sudden playing an NFL game at the most important position. I didn't think we'd get there.
Well, how about this? Beyond that, okay? Because I have said to you before that we have never in our lifetimes, none of us, nobody listening to this, have ever seen sports stripped down to its bare naked greed the way you're presently witnessing. The Mohican Sun is where we're playing college basketball, and it would appear, if you watch what happened with Gonzaga, that we're just all just making this up as we go along. Dan Wolkin wrote about this for Yahoo Sports.
The Zags.
We are in a position where the rules in sports can't be followed. Are they shutting down all of the NFL today and tomorrow in terms of facilities? Are they shutting down all of them in the NFL?
I think the teams that have games today and tomorrow, their facilities are open, although I don't know how Baltimore could open their facility.
Every day there's a new one, and I'm worried about Mark Andrews, who has a pre-existing condition. Willie Snead. It's weird because you see this Adam Schefter report that says no new tests, and then two starters end up testing positive, and the way that this outbreak works is that there's an incubation period, so you really don't know how bad this is going to get, but it seems as though the NFL is hell-bent on playing this game on Tuesday.
Hell-bent on getting their money. Before we go down the path of talking more about COVID and our holidays, I do want to ask you guys this question because we've been obsessed around here about the evolution of the tight end. Once upon a time, Kellen Winslow Sr. was unbelievably athletic and large for the position. And my guess is, even though he was large for the position at the time, my guess is that most tight ends today are 40, 50 pounds heavier than he was.
I would agree. He, at the time, was unlike anything we had ever seen, though, at that position.
And so you go on to Shannon Sharp, and, you know, you go on to Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates, and the guy keeps getting bigger and bigger. The tight end position gets more and more unguardable until you arrive at Gronk. And yet, when I'm looking at these giant guys, the thing that I don't understand, Stugatz, because Kelce is better than Gronk at this point, is I don't understand how Mark Andrews specifically does that. And I think I'm mustache biased because none of these other guys have just a mustache. But and it might be, honest to God, I might be underestimating his athleticism because he's white, but I think it's the mustache. I don't think it's that he's white, but it might be that he's white with that mustache. I can't separate these things. But I don't understand how Mark Andrews specifically, in an offense with limited playmakers outside of quarterback, I don't understand how Mark Andrews is always open. Is it just that he's larger than everybody else?
I think you got to pick your poison, right? Like, you're going to leave someone open. It's probably Mark Andrews.
But their skill guys aren't that good. Yeah, it's not like you're scared of anybody other than Lamar Jackson. Maybe Brown, but...
Mina said on her podcast that if NFL defenses are doing anything different against the Ravens this year as opposed to last year, because Lamar Jackson's struggles this year are a little difficult to pinpoint, is they're concentrating a little bit more on taking the middle of the field away, where Lamar Jackson is his most accurate, and that is Mark Andrews, his favorite target. Also, I haven't seen Mark Andrews with a mustache. He's universally bearded in all his pro photos here. Is that all you're seeing in the helmet?
Maybe that's what it is. All I've seen is the mustache. Maybe his chin strap is extra large. Because
either way, T's and P's over to Mark Andrews.
Yeah. Now, Kellen Winslow was 6'5", 250 pounds. Again, he was unlike anything we had ever seen at that position.
Yeah, so. And Travis Kelce's 260, and he looks slight at the position.
You've got Kellen Winslow Sr. is 250 pounds? Are you looking at junior or senior?
Senior.
Senior, 250.
Junior was lighter.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, they're actually getting smaller. It was a weird take. I remember, like, maybe it's their pad size, but Mark Bavaro looks like 40 pounds heavier than the likes of Travis Kelce.
Help me out here, Stugatz, because are my eyes lying to me? When I think of the tight end of that age, like Antonio Gates looks like somebody who's 250 pounds, but Tony Gonzalez and Shannon Sharp look like they're about 15 or 20 sculpted pounds less than that. And what I remember of Kellen Winslow, and I must have this wrong, even though listings with weights are off and off, they're not going to be 20, 30 pounds off. I do not remember Kellen Winslow Sr. being 250 pounds the way like Ben Coates would be.
So here's the thing. I don't know if, you know, this is Kellen Winslow Sr.'s weight now or if it's Kellen Winslow Sr.'s weight when he actually played.
I think it's when he played.
I mean, you know?
It's when he played because they were dependent more on blocking back then. The positions changed. You actually need to be a little bit more svelte now to get downfield. Keith Byers, his route tree was pretty limited. They'd like him on the line blocking at 260.
Well, Keith Byers doesn't even count as a tight end, does he?
They had to change him to a tight end later in his career.
Man, when you think of Keith Jackson, for example,
right,
in those Miami offenses, how big do you think of him as? Because, Mike, you can't tell me these guys are getting smaller. You can't.
I think they're getting more svelte, yeah. They're getting more put together. They're speedier. They're wide receivers. They're often.
But how much more put together can you be than Shannon Sharp and Tony Gonzalez?
The way that I would do it is tight ends used to be just converted linemen who had the occasional ability to catch. Now they're converted wide receivers. They're converted quarterbacks.
Right.
It's a totally different skill set needed
now. Logan
Thomas. Yeah, as the game has evolved. Before, it was like Eric Winston would be a tight end or a left tackle.
But Gesicki for the Dolphins, he's 6'6", 250. I'm kind of with Dan where I just
Kellen
imagine.
Kellen Winslow Sr. did not look like Gesicki, who's running around out there and looks bigger than everyone he's playing against.
But that's actually impressive because Gesicki is taller than Kellen Winslow Sr. And to be at a similar weight, that's harder to do. So they've gotten slimmer.
He's not that much taller, though.
Listening to all the names you guys have been saying, I think tight end might be the second best looking position behind quarterback. If you think about all the good tight ends in the league, some good-looking people. I can't name a better looking position other than quarterback than tight end.
It's pretty good. Kelsey's a good looking guy. You're right.
Greg Olsen from a few years ago.
Greg Olsen's a very good looking
guy. I think there
guy.
Might be some cultural bias going on here, even though Tony Gonzalez.
Even the Winslows are good looking people. No, I know they're a little like the son was a little shady, but.
Little shady?
Leave the dad alone.
You think the son was a little shady?
I'm just trying to be politically correct. I don't know what to say.
He's probably the shadiest guy to ever play in the NFL.
I mean, he's up there. He's up there. He really is.
To say the least, a little shady.
I think that what is happening there is you are choosing the whitest of positions. I think that's what's happening.
Darren Waller, good looking. Antonio Gates, good looking.
Boom.
They're getting a little slimmer because Greg Olsen's the same weight as Marcus Pollard, despite being 2 to 3 inches taller than Marcus Pollard.
Tony Gonzalez.
I know. That is where good looking starts and ends. I thought that's where you were beginning on the tight end. And I've said that the exceptions that you could lob at me in terms of good looking tight ends who aren't white were the Hispanic region of Tony Gonzalez and the black consulate of Shannon Sharp. Yes, you can have. But you've got more dominant white guys, Kelsey, Gronk, this mustachioed bearded Andrews.
OJ. He's really good looking. Andrews could be a
Cameron,
model.
Cameron Brate.
OJ Howard is a very good looking young man. I will tell
Gesicki,
you that.
Good looking.
I think that you're right. But again, give me all the other.
It's just a good looking position, Dan. We're not talking about colors. Jesus.
Mark Chamara, 255. George Kittle,
Chewy.
249.
Yeah. Kitty cat. Is he healthy?
No one calls him that.
Everyone does.
No one calls George Kittle kitty cat.
I'm telling you.
No one
should. Well,
his
they
friends
should.
Do. Yeah.
I don't think that's a thing.
Guillermo, for me it is.
Put it. That is not a nickname. Jordan that is Reed's not a real nickname. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Does anyone call George Kittle's kitty cat?
Here, kitty, kitty.
The only thing that was redeeming about the Jets yesterday, Stugat, it is flabbergasting to watch how terrible and constipated your team is. Lord knows we've been watching that Jets-Dolphins game for two damn decades.
Yep.
Two damn decades of 20 to 3. Somebody's got 3. The other's got 20. Hooray, Jumbo Elliott just caught a ball in the end zone to win on Monday night. But Sam Darnold, this fact right here I'm about to give you guys, I thought was the only thing from Jets-Dolphins that made an appearance that was worth anything. And it's that Sam Darnold's grandfather, do you know what his name is, Stugat?
No.
Sam Darnold's grandfather, who was one of the original Marlboro men, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Sam Darnold's grandfather was in the commercial, a guy who was a symbol for masculinity in America because it became cool and not cancerous to smoke cigarettes, and then it became cancerous and less cool. But at the time, the original Marlboro men were some of the coolest men anywhere. And Sam Darnold's grandfather, who had that job, his name was Dick Hammer.
Those are synonyms.
What?
For Jets? For Jets fans? Dick Hammer is the name, and he is – you can't live up to your grandfather even if you're Mahomes. You can be Mahomes and not live up to your grandfather, who's one of the original Marlboro men named Dick Hammer.
God, that guy Mahomes. Yeah, he's the greatest we've ever seen.
Yes.
I'm curious because he kind of has like a weird body. How is games going to age? Like, is he going to end up taking care of himself? Because he's doing this with like a weird – body that's oddly shaped in parts, right?
Do you guys? It's his hips, right? It's his hips that's weird.
It's his hips.
It's like his hips region.
He's not cut. It's the one criticism you could have of Patrick Mahomes that he doesn't actually need to take. By the way, as a quarterback runner, his vision, he's so smart. He's such a smart runner. It's the most underrated part of his game because he's got the greatest arm we've ever
Mike,
seen.
He's such a smart player.
Oh, he's brilliant.
I don't know what you're supposed to do when he looks off the safety and throws it across the field with perfect touch to Tyreek Hill. Like, what can you do other than lose? Tyreek Hill had 200 receiving yards in the first quarter, Stugatz.
All right, now don't play him man-to-man. I mean, that's it. They tried to. I mean, the Bucs tried to. They did not waver from their game plan and tried to play him straight
He was
up.
On pace to have a 1,000-yard game. he was on pace. Like in the fight, it was ridiculous. What are you supposed to do? And then when they don't throw it to him, they're throwing it to Kelce. And that guy's a total mutant.
Yeah. And they have Watkins just for shits and giggles, basically. And when they have Watkins out there, Tyreek Hill doesn't have to do any of this decoy nonsense, because that's really like the only way that you can stop Tyreek Hill is if he decides to be used as a decoy.
Is there a third guy? There are two. You talk about weird bodies and bodies we inspect in the NFL. Can you guys give me, not on defense, because there are some guys on defense who look like this, but when I tell you the body type that you need to tackle is Tyreek Hill, and the only other body I've seen exactly like this one in a larger model is A.J. Brown, where you're like, good God. Like, that's just that. All that is, you can only hit bone on that dude. Like, you cannot tackle something, anything that's soft on that dude, no matter how small he is. And I'm trying to think if there's a third body you guys can think of. Like, I don't think of Kamara that way.
Metcalf.
Like, they're built. I'm not talking about muscularity. I'm just talking about something that feels like it's made out of the bowling balls material.
Yeah, well, Derrick Henry, too.
Well, but
that's the entire strength and conditioning program at Tennessee.
How the Titans, can you tell me, like, if you're playing against them, like, you know Derrick Henry's coming yesterday. The Colts are supposed to have a good defense. What the hell are you supposed to do when that starts running downhill on you?
You also start running downhill away from it. This upcoming Sunday is going to be fun with Chubb and Derrick Henry in the same game.
Yes, going to be a good game. I needed the Jacksonville Jaguars to win a game yesterday. Your Browns pulled that one out.
Oh, wait a minute.
I really needed a win from Mike Glennon.
Okay, you needed him as a Jet. I want to talk about this about that game, though, because Mina Kimes' gambling advice was not good yesterday.
It's weighted. She won $1 million for someone else and lost us about $600.
She won $1 million. Do you know this? For somebody, for David Chang, the celebrity chef on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. She helped him win $1 million.
Really? No.
It was incredibly, it was incredibly dramatic. I was watching. David Chang is one of a handful of celebrities to actually get to the $1 million question. But only Norm Macdonald previously has attempted at answering the $1 million question. All the other ones quit while they're ahead. And David Chang went for it. He had one lifeline left. That lifeline was Mina for an impossibly difficult question.
Wow. First president to have electricity in the White House was the question.
Correct.
And she guessed. Or she wasn't guessing. She said, this is probable. X is probable. I don't remember. What was it, Hoover?
She went Harrison, who I think Jimmy Kimmel and both David Chang weren't exactly sure was even a president. And she went Harrison.
Wait, she went Harrison, and she stated she's not 100% sure on this, and it's the $1 million question?
She actually said she was going to say Harrison or Cleveland, even though Cleveland wasn't one of the options. What she did was a timeline thing, the timeline of electricity, and she also knows all the presidents in order. So she's actually, man, Yale actually turned out to be a pretty good school.
You're right.
She couldn't get into Harvard.
Mm-hmm. But unless you know that for certain, you have to ask your phone a friend if you know for certain if that's answer.
She did not say for certain.
She did not.
But she pushed him in that direction, and he trusted her because she's Mina Kimes. Regardless,
I'm with Stugatz. Giving a maybe in that spot.
It wasn't
like
a maybe. She was leaning.
Like, it was a pretty strong answer.
We're at the $1 million question. It's got to be a guarantee.
Okay, but she couldn't guarantee it because she wasn't 100% sure. And also, though, this is funny about Mina's personality, right? Because Mike and I were teasing her about how bad she was at gambling yesterday, and she actually it feels like you have to be more gentle than you would be with some of your other friends roughhousing with how awful they were at gambling on a day.
It's all fun and games when she's winning, though, huh?
Yes. You can't rib her. She doesn't take kindly to the rib.
Just in that instance, because she didn't ask for any of this. She really didn't ask for me and Mike asking her for
No 30 for 30s on 0-16 during bowl season, huh?
She was only 0-3 yesterday. But
does seem to be leveling out for her, though.
Well, two two of the losses were brutal, though. One of them was the Chiefs game. She had Chiefs 3.5.
Thanks, Andy Reid.
Loss is a loss, Dan.
That is correct. And the other one is that she had Cleveland over Jacksonville.
Disastrous officiating.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo.
Why am I rooting for her to lose? It's weird.
Guillermo, put it on the poll.
Because you're not getting the picks.
You're right.
At Lebatard Show. Has Stugatz,
like a win.
Has Stugatz ever given more useless life advice than a loss is a loss at Lebatard Show? She had the Jacksonville-Cleveland game, and she had it won the entire game. And at the end, of course, Jacksonville comes storming back. But one of the things that happened in this game, and I don't know if you guys were watching this, it's something I've never seen before watching football. And I was on the wrong side yesterday, and this was an apocalyptic, laughable day for me. But I was on the wrong side of every single damn fourth and short in the sport yesterday. Like, everyone. The Chargers at the end trying to get in the end zone to cover. There were like seven of them, and I was 0-for-7. Wrong on every single one. But the thing I've never seen before is they brought out the chains. Cleveland Browns, 4th and inches.
It was a first down.
I thought it should have been a first down. I did not understand how they were looking at the chains that looked different on television from how I was looking at the chains. I thought it was a first down by the nub, by the little doorstop at the end of the first down marker. They stretched it as far as they could, and I thought it was a first down. And then they go the other way and immediately score and cover and everything else. And I'm like, wait a minute. I just saw it with my own eyes. They stretched out that chain, and it was a first down. How was that not a first down? And they took the ball away from them. And at that moment, Stugatz, they should have just immediately put on the scoreboard, never mind about your -7. Yeah. Also, bleep yourself.
Yeah, it was lost there.
How is that possible? Have you guys ever seen that before?
There is a chance that maybe the camera was playing tricks on us, because I'm not 100% sure it was a down-the-line view, but from the camera still that was shown on TV, what? It looked like a first down.
I mean, the chains never lied, man.
Well, that's the thing, though, Stugatz.
Well, also, Boger held up his hands like it was like a yard away, which was confusing.
This is also the thing. This is exactly how I experienced this, okay? I want you to, like, this is going to be something that you can laugh at, okay? Just everything. Going wrong for me. Everything. I got a Viking getting hit in the helmet at the end of the game by a punt. Like, just.
I saw that. That's unfortunate.
It's just nonstop. I'm laughing in my television because nothing is going right. And then in the middle of that, Stugatz, in the middle of that, I want you guys to imagine you've got Cleveland -7 and the Browns are up 8 in the game, have the ball. They've got 3rd and inches. They don't get it. Now they've got 4th and inches. And if they're going to finish the game, if they just get a first down, and Jacksonville's not going to have time, and then Cleveland's also going to score when they keep the ball.
Baker, so, you're talking about the Baker miss throw that set up that 4th down,
oh
too.
Oh, my God. Such a
throw behind
him.
Baker, you know, had some howlers.
And you know, if Mike Glennon gets the ball back, he's going for
Because Mike Glennon
needs to be going for it.
Well, he said it before the game. He's like YOLO into this game. I got nothing to lose.
I got to be honest with you, because I was just taking Mina's advice. I did not know that he was a Jag until he was throwing into my end zone.
Well, I don't want to question Mina, but when she came in with the Browns, I was like, man, the Browns are missing their entire secondary and haven't practiced all week because of COVID. Are we sure we want to do this? Because Mike Glennon says he's coming for them.
Okay, and Mike Glennon just stormed down the field. But again, I want to take you guys through this because it's a mind bleep. It really is. So I'm watching, and everything's losing. And I'm like 4th and inches. And at this point, I'm also in the desperate sort of phase where you know things are going to go wrong for you because nothing has gone right. Like, you know good and well, of course it's 4th and inches. What kind of apocalyptic thing is going to happen to me here?
I started knowing it wasn't going to go our way when the Falcons decided for once in their lives to extend a lead.
Yes, that's right. That was the big play of the day yesterday. Raiders. Are the Raiders for real?
Not anymore.
Today, Dan.
Not anymore.
Yeah. They're not anymore. Maybe check in with you guys next week.
Yeah, we'll see.
And so they're measuring it. And I'm basically pooping myself the entire time they're stretching the chain. There's all sorts of drama. Mike's a Browns fan, so I imagine he's experiencing this on two fronts. It's not just the betting, but it's also his team is here in a position.
Yeah, I'm so used to us losing these games, so and I thought this was yet another invention of a way to lose.
Of course.
And so it takes a minute, though. You saw the drama, right, of the chain. They pull it a little bit. I'm looking at the slack on the chain. I'm counting chain links.
I thought we were short, and then I'm like, they clearly have to stretch this more, but it never stretched. I'm like, sweet, first down. I do the first down motion in my living room, and Boger puts up a yard in the air.
That's the thing. Then the referee comes out and holds over his head what is clearly a yard, and I'm like, I'm taking crazy pills. Like, I just saw that it's a first down. This is the universe conspiring against me. What is this referee? What is he out there saying that he's holding, like he caught a giant fish and was holding it over his head.
Showing you the size.
And he's like, that's more than a yard. I saw that was clearly a first down, if anything.
At least for optics, you got to go.
It's not even a chain link. It's not even because they got all the chain links.
For television optics, you at least have to like hold up your index finger and thumb and just go, ooh, by just a whittle.
You got to give them a little something. I miss the way you're describing this. I miss a little chain stress. I really do. It's been a while since you had the stress of waiting to see how long that chain is going to extend.
But everything I know about the chain has now been thrown out the window because the Browns got it from the camera view that I saw. But then there goes Mike Glennon just attacking a defense down to one corner.
Not just that. I again want everyone in this audience to allow to marinate the fact that that referee came out after what I thought was going to be a first down signal from him, because it was obvious that it should have been a first down signal according to that camera angle.
First down signal with authority?
Well, I just thought it was going to be a damn first down. First down for the
Browns.
Because
I have eyes.
I saw him looking at his arms and I'm like, wait a minute. Why in God's name is he holding, as if he were over his head, a championship belt? Why is he telling me? Like, he could just go first down in the other direction and that would hurt enough. But no, he says it wasn't even close. He says that everything I just saw and everything I believe in the world is a lie.
What a waste of time to bring out these chains.
I don't understand where he's telling the entire audience. It was not only not close, this is how far it was, and he's holding his...
He should have just held up two middle fingers.
That's is the same. Well, he was.
Yeah.
That is how I experienced all of that.
And then Glennon.
It's like getting hit right in the dick hammer.
So, Chris, when Brian Flores pulled Tua, it was because at first you thought maybe Tua was hurt because you saw an ankle in a replay. He wasn't hurt. But then somehow in practice, he legitimately gets hurt, which is always a cause for concern when you're generally worried about a prospect's health entering the NFL. A thumb injury, it looks like Fitzpatrick is the guy for the next couple of weeks here. But Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's nice to have a Ryan Fitzpatrick as your backup quarterback, and it's even nicer to play the Jets. The Dolphins keep marching on in a good week to actually get a win because they gain ground on a lot of the teams they're chasing.
I mean, yeah, I think the story here is the defense, like the Tua Fitzpatrick stuff. Like when Tua is healthy, he'll be the guy. Like, we don't need to go down that path right now. I just think the real story is this defense. The Dolphins are the fourth best point differential in the entire league. I feel like that Fitzpatrick Tua conversation is kind of overshadowing Xavien Howard leading the league in interceptions.
Their corners. That's
very
good. Not very good. It's the best in the league. Like, the reason they're good at defense is because their corners are both at the very top of the league. It's amazing to have one of those guys, Stugatz. They've got two of them. Like, throughout that sport, if you get one of those guys, you're willing to take your chances. And the reason they're good at defense is those two guys.
They're making a play every week, which is massive when you have questions around the quarterback position. Xavien Howard, he's in the conversation. He's not going to win it. But for me, I think he's like third behind Donald and Garrett, who's probably played himself out of the award now with the COVID issues. Defensive player of the year. Xavien Howard's been awesome.
Forgot, I think it can be called already. I think this is the best tandem of cornerbacks, not just in the league, that the Dolphins have ever had. In the history of the franchise, I believe that these two are better than Surtain and Madison.
Whoa. You're talking Hall of Famers now. I mean,
they're not Hall of Famers.
Oh, well, they should be.
I wasn't talking Hall of Famers.
Future Dolphin Hall of Famers.
Dan's right on this.
I think they're Hall of Fame.
Ring of Honor, maybe?
Ring of Honor, yeah.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you.
Aqua jackets. It's crazy that you can make the argument. I could almost argue watching all these games that Byron Jones has been just as good as Xavien Howard. They just don't throw it over there. It's the Champ Bailey situation. Howard has all these interceptions because they just don't throw it at Byron Jones.
Mike, please help me out here because I'd like to try and get that off the ground again. You were dramatically overreacting to me making a historic perspective, hot take point. Let's try it again as a group and let's see where this goes. I am willing to make the argument that these two cornerbacks that the Miami Dolphins have are the best two cornerbacks, not only in the league, but in the history of the Miami Dolphins.
What?
What?
I mean,
what?
72 Dolphin cornerbacks never lost a game.
What about T-Buck?
Unbelievable. I've never seen that before.
Blasphemy.
Wacky.
Do you even know who I'm talking about, Chris? Like, do Madison and Sertan predate you because it's so long ago?
Do you remember T-Buck?
Oh, they hated him. You can make, who are the two most hated cornerbacks? Is it J.B. Brown and Terrell Buckley in Dolphins history? Because Stugatz, like that, every fan base.
Ooh, Jamar Fletcher.
Oh, Fletch.
Oh, because they drafted him early. Every fan base over the course, this has to be true, what I'm about to say, right? Every organization in football knows what it's like to have its fan base hate one of its cornerbacks, specifically because the guy is always getting penalties or you're seeing him beat a lot because it's a very difficult position to play. But I thought in the history of the Miami Dolphins, the two guys, more than any others, you guys see, tell me, Roy, this would be a wheelhouse for you too, I would suspect. J.B. Brown and Terrell Buckley, are there any others? Is there a third one that, like, Miami Dolphins fans just hated?
Man, I'm of a certain age because Fletcher was a guy that they took instead of, was it Drew Brees?
I think that's a good one. I think Fletcher is a good one because he was a first-round pick. Was it Wanstead took him, right?
Yeah, I think it was just like we could have had blank, but instead we took this guy that didn't make any contributions and would always get beat.
I feel like everybody hated Jamar Taylor. Am I right on that?
Younger generation.
I just don't think he rises to the level. See, those teams that we're talking about had expectations. That kind of changes how much you can hate your cornerback.
Ooh, the corner that they hated most was Brent Grimes' wife.
That's a good one.
That's pretty good. He took Jason Allen in the first round.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah, they had these guys, the guys that they took. Eddie Moore was also in this universe. Guys that they took, but they ended up passing on other guys. John Avery, because they could have had Moss. There were these guys that didn't work out in the NFL. Doesn't matter what kind of career they had. It's the career that the other guy had.
They had Jamar Fletcher. They could have taken Reggie Wayne that year. Todd Heap was available. Drew Brees, as you mentioned, was available. That one hurt.
Those all of the things that we're talking about. That's interesting, actually, when it comes
Chad Johnson was available.
Hating the position. It all is about expectations. In two of the cases, it's first-round picks, and in the other two cases, it's teams that were expected to be good and then were foiled by a player to a game because of their cornerback play. But you have reasons to be excited about the Dolphin defense, even though that Jets team, that's as bad as a football team as you will ever see in professional football.
They might go winless, dude.
They're not trying to win, Mike. I mean, they're trying to go winless.
I cannot believe this team is that bad. Your skill guys aren't that bad. Herndon, Perriman, and
Mims. Well, that was the first time they were healthy, and they didn't do anything because of the cornerbacks. That's the first. Isn't that the first time the Jets' offense has been healthy this season where you have all the wide receivers are there and Darnold is playing?
Yeah, but the running backs are hurt now. Yeah. So now it's Frank Gore. And Le'Veon Bell's gone. Perrine, the rookie they drafted out of Florida, got hurt, so he's not playing. But, yes, wide receivers, tight ends, first time.
It was their first time with a full, healthy roster, and they scored the same amount of points as a team that didn't have a quarterback.
What a stat. Great pull, Tony.
Stugant, Sam Darnold, like, are you done with that experience?
Yep, and so are they. I think they are. He's not good, Dan, and he hasn't been good, and he's had ample opportunity. And I'm telling you, my feeling is, and I'm not upset. The Jets are doing exactly what I've wanted them to do forever. They're not just bad. They're historically bad, and they might end up with Trevor Lawrence.
Let me ask the audience this question, and let me ask you guys this question. You know I'm exasperated very often by how difficult it is to measure in that sport whether someone is going to be good, whether you have a quarterback who can play.
To measure if a football is a first down or not.
All measurements in footballs elude me never more than yesterday. But when you're looking at Sam Darnold there, Stugatz, and Tony Romo has said, when he comes out that he's the best of the bunch and promises to be one of the best quarterbacks ever. And Tony Romo just signed for, you saw how much money, $17 million. And by consensus, he clearly knows what he's talking about, and he knows more football and has enthusiasm for football that is really charming. And this is no indictment of Tony Romo. But when he says that about Sam Darnold,
right,
and it's that wrong where Sam Darnold, like that you're watching Sam Darnold and Mahomes, and you don't see that, you can't see that Mahomes is what Mahomes is going to be and that Darnold will never be that. You explain, no. You explain to me how impossible it must be to measure this position. We laughed at Tannenbaum when he said he would have taken Herbert instead of Tua or Burrow, and it seems obvious
that he's the guy.
Herbert's the best rookie quarterback any of us have seen statistically outside of Marino. He's going to be first in completions, first in yards, on pace, first in touchdowns for a rookie quarterback ever. Like, it's not – Tua and Burrow do not look like Herbert looks.
If Sam Darnold played with Kansas City in that offense, do you think he'd look something
– No. He'd have help and he'd be better, but it wouldn't be this.
And I'm agreeing with you. Do you think the Jets would be good if they had Patrick Mahomes?
I think any team in the sport would be good if they had Patrick Mahomes.
Listen, I can't explain, and it doesn't mean Mike Tannenbaum knows more than anyone. He might have just gotten it right this time. Okay, and with all due respect to Mike, I have no idea.
Oh, no, but no, this is not an ability is my point. Sometimes Tannenbaum's going to be right, and sometimes he's not going to be. But I'm asking you specifically about Romo and the idea that he would be that wrong about Sam Darnold.
It's not just Romo. I have grown to respect Mina Kimes' opinion on this stuff more so than Tony Romo's. I'm serious, because she really absorbs it. She watches it. She watches all his plays. She told me Sam Darnold was going to be great. And he's turned out to be a complete disaster. He's just not very good. And so I would just say it's very difficult to determine who's coming out of college, whose game's going to be able to translate to the NFL.
Billy,
it's such a hard position, man.
Billy, we were talking about this. You were talking a couple of weeks ago. You had mentioned that we were talking about Taysom Hill and Sean Payton and having more information than the rest of us. And you pointed out correctly that just because they have more information than the rest of us doesn't mean that Bill O'Brien's not going to be dumb at every turn, because it would appear that Deshaun Watson is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And somehow they've botched everything around him, because it looks like Deshaun Watson would win anywhere in the damn sport except where he is, because he's clearly and obviously great.
Well, he's won there. Keep in mind, they were up 24-0 first half Kansas City last year.
But this year, they've been pretty terrible. And his moves were universally panned before the season.
The thing about all this that's interesting, would we have even seen Justin Herbert if they didn't puncture Tyrod Taylor's lung? Probably not. So they look like geniuses, but they weren't going to be playing him.
Billy, it's true of Tom Brady, because Drew Bledsoe had a lung problem and Belichick was reluctant to play Brady and then was forced to. I think it's also true of Tony Romo in Dallas, because I think Bill Parcells was trying to go with Quincy Carter until Quincy Carter got hurt something.
I think that was another Bledsoe situation.
And it may have gone the other way too. Right after that, Romo was replaced by Dak Prescott, but he was replaced only after Dak Prescott got to play, because they hadn't seen it. So all of this is super weird. But when, you know, you guys have made fun of me for a bit about always pointing out the six-time executive of the year, Bill Polian, said Lamar Jackson could not play that position in the sport. But Tony Romo saying that Sam Darnold was better than Patrick Mahomes and had a chance to be one of the best quarterbacks ever, isn't that just as an egregious a miss in terms of value and valuation? Like, just as bad.
It's bad, but at least he didn't say Sam Darnold would be better as a tight end, which he might be, by the way. He might be a better tight end than he is a quarterback.
I'm just marveling at Stu Gatz. I feel like 3 weeks ago or so, he was saying Sam Darnold is like the future, and he's just transitioned very smoothly into he's happy that he's a bust. Like, I'm just impressed by that. That's very impressive.
You've noticed. Thank you.
Billy, what's happening here? You got a giant smile on your face, and I've been trying to get off all season off the ground, and you guys, for as much lying as Stu Gatz has done over the years, Nobody has been able to help me get off the ground the idea that we don't believe that this isn't an elaborate coping mechanism from Stugatz pretending like he's okay with this so that we can't bury him every week about having the worst team any of us have ever seen. Like, none of you, and I see you smiling at Stugatz's about face from 3 weeks ago, Billy, so why?
Well, because I texted Stugatz after Sam Darnold's like first or second start. I'm like, you have a quarterback. And I think he's just been awful ever since. And Stugatz has cursed me ever since because he told me I jinxed him.
You did that last year. Yeah.
And he lit up Matt Patricia, his first game on Monday Night Football. We all thought Sam Darnold was a real deal.
Dan, if your team has been as lousy as my team has been, not the last decade, not the last two decades, my entire life, okay? 45 years I've been a Jet fan. If they have been that bad, okay, and they have been, and you finally have a chance to get the most valuable thing in the sport this year, which is the rights to draft Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, why would you not be happy about
because
that?
You don't
because the only way this thing's going to work is if they get one of those guys.
Because you don't do perspective. That's why. Because you always take the short view. You've been wanting to sign for that team. You wanted to sign a 50-year-old Scottie Pippen for the Miami Heat.
I did.
You would have put John Elway in the game yesterday because he's a name for the Broncos at 60 years old.
We have him, Joe Flacco.
I'm interested to see how you start handling these losses as you approach 0-16.
Just fine, Mike.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I didn't want to go 0-16.
I know Frank Gore doesn't want to go 0-16. I know the Jets don't want to go 0-16. What do I care if they go 0-16? They're a laughing stock regardless.
Oh, wait a minute, though, guys.
Oh, I don't care.
Hold on.
0-16 gets me the quarterback. Okay.
This is different because the Jags seem to be coming for you, right? So you may 0-16 may be necessary if you want to get the guy. Rare is it the time that you have one of these surefire prospects like Manning or Luck.
All of us here are old enough to remember how hard the Miami Dolphins were trying to avoid 0-16 the year that Greg Camarillo against the Ravens ended Brian Billick's entire career. That's when he stopped being good and no one wanted to hire him when he lost to, was it the Cleo Lemon? It was the Cleo Lemon Miami Dolphins, was it not? I mean, that team did not want to go 0-16. That fan base did not want to go 0-16, Stugatz. So I understand the perspective you're showing. It just doesn't feel very much like fandom because the Jets spell fandom with the D-U-M-B. Like,
but this is the only way my team and organization gets back. It's the only way, Dan.
I agree with you.
Free agents don't want to be there.
Stugatz, you're totally right. Okay. That is the way that you should be looking at it. Like, yes. It doesn't matter whether you're 1-15 or 0-16. Secure the pick. Get the value of the pick that could change your next 10 years. It's just not how the emotion of fandom usually works.
No, and not for me especially. You're right. But 0-11 is a special place where if you're at 0-11, why not 0-16? Like, who cares? If they were, you know, if they were still vying for a wild card spot, you're right. Get Elway out of this. Stands get anyone, all right, to play quarterback yesterday in that game, but they're not. And now the only thing I have to look forward to is one of those two guys coming out of college, preferably the guy from Clemson, and the Jets have the inside track on him. Man, I mean, the Jags are pushing him, though.
I hate that the Browns went 0-16, and I have Miles Garrett to show for it, and right? I still hate that the Browns went
0-16. But, like, in what way do you, like, it affects your life? Who
cares?
Well,
hold on. Wait a minute.
Super embarrassing.
Hold on. Wait. Stugatz.
Being a Browns fan is super embarrassing.
I don't understand what's happening here. Stugatz, all your life, you are right now.
I'm a Jet fan. I mean,
no, I am with Billy.
I'm embarrassed enough.
I am with Billy and Chris on this. Whoa, this is a quick about face where Stugatz is basically swearing off what it is to be a fan. He's like, oh, who cares whether I'm embarrassed or not, my team? I'm not. This might be a product of age that Stugatz has been beaten up by this team so much that he doesn't care.
I feel like I've never been a better fan. I am willing to sacrifice and root for my team to lose in order for them to get better.
But you don't care about the shame. So, Chris, tell me.
Shame? When have I ever cared about shame?
Chris, Billy, Tony,
shame.
Roy, tell me. The year the Dolphins appeared to be going toward 0-16, how did you feel about that?
Not great. I was embarrassed. I have to admit, Stugatz. Like, I'm with you. Like, I kind of get where you're at here, but that's bad. 0-16 is bad.
Wasn't that the Camarillo play here?
Yeah.
It was like they won the Super Bowl.
Yes.
No, everyone was happy. I ran around my house like we won the Super Bowl when we won that game.
Do you remember who was waiting for you at the end of that year? Like, was there a guy coming out in the draft? Do you remember?
didn't take like Chris Long or something.
I think he did. You took Jake Long. Right. I'm not playing for a tackle. I'm playing for a generational quarterback here. I mean,
yeah, Matt Ryan was there, and they decided Bill Parcells decided to go for Jake Long, who's been out of the league for several years.
Tony, your reaction to the Dolphins, were you also jumping around the house when the Greg Camarillo, was that in overtime or was it at the end of the game? I think it was overtime.
It was a walk-off.
Brian Billick did some dumb thing on fourth and short and then just, again, never worked again after that in football as everyone becomes a retread. I'm sure Matt Patricia is going to end up somewhere here in like 2 weeks.
I didn't really care. I was more focused in 2007 watching the Patriots go undefeated, so I didn't really it didn't really bother me.
Roy?
I leapt into Alex Dono's arms in the ticket studio.
No, wait a minute. Have any of you ever seen
Roy leap
into anyone's arms? That would be the height of joy for you. None of us have ever seen you jump into anyone's arms excited. Tony and Chris are laughing right now, Roy. You jumped into his arms. He held you up in the air. That MMA caveman.
Yeah. Well, listen. When you're trying to avoid 0-16, sometimes a leap is needed.
Hold on.
Like, wait. Paint this picture for me. Please. Is he lifting you from under your armpits
like a figure skater?
Or are you jumping up and he's like catching you and your legs are like, you know what I mean, where your butt's in between his two arms?
Oh, I jumped up and he caught me.
Wow.
So you were like a koala bear on his torso? You were like, you wrapped your legs around him? It wasn't the,
I did not wrap my legs around him, Dan.
Did he cradle you like a baby kind of thing?
Where was he holding you? Because I imagine
arms around the back, upper back.
Oh, okay.
Dono seems like a good hugger.
Where was he holding you?
Well, I imagine the thing is, I'm imagining Dono like the referee in that Jacksonville Cleveland game, holding his hands apart above him, and Roy just sort of parallel planking there like a figure skater. That's not how it was. You jumped into his arms. You did not wrap around, but he held you up under your arms.
That's right. And I had one arm in the air like this.
So, it was Rocky and Apollo in the beach, the slow motion. So you had one. So where was this? Was this in the sad radio cafeteria? Where was it?
No, it was between the on-air studio and the back bullpen.
In the sad hallway?
Sad hallway.
That has to be a top five Dolphin moment over the last 20 years, does it not?
Oh, man.
In that hallway, yes. Not the Camarillo moment. Roy Bellamy just being so champagne bottle opening effervescent that he jumps into the arms of that bear, that MMA bear, Alex Dono.
Our show celebrated the hell out of that. We had Camarillo on. It was the cherry on top of what was Greg Camarillo Day.
Today we celebrate Greg Camarillo Day.
I see the production hasn't gotten any better around here in all the years since. Can you empty out the Camarillo file? Do you have
a lot of them are songs, and I can't play that on the podcast. But we did an interview with him that made the best of. We played Douche or No Douche with him. We really embraced Greg Camarillo.
Such a big catch, such a big play. I mean, 64 yards, walk off, overtime. It's not the traditional 64 yard catch because the Dolphins don't do that. It was a bubble screen.
Yeah, of course. I long for the days of Greg Camarillo. I can't believe, Roy, what would rank as the second most excited any of us have ever seen you? But I think, Billy, I'm right when I say none of us can imagine Roy joyously jumping in anyone's damn arm.
Everyday lunch comes.
Oh, I mean, I'd think like a nod, like, yeah.
I think we went to that hockey game a couple months back.
That's right.
Panthers scored a goal. I'm pretty sure I saw like a fist bump.
Yeah.
Ooh, where he just kind of like rocked his fist.